Genevieve, still floating with the wonder of it all, opened the wounds on Detlef's neck. She heard gasps from the audience as blood trickled over his collar. The ballads lied about this. It had never happened. At least, not this way. Although, 25 years later, she realised how much she had desired it. Oswald had never really responded to her, had kept his blood to himself, despite his formal offers. He had once given her his wrist, as a man feeds a dog, and she had needed the blood too much to refuse. That still rankled. She wondered how Oswald would react to the perpetuation of the old story, the old lie. How he was feeling now, as he sat next to the Emperor, watching a vampire feed on his surrogate. The hours flew by, in the play and without. The forces of darkness gathered. 5. For Detlef, the evening was a triumph. Genevieve was an inspiration. During the comparatively few scenes when the character of Oswald was off stage, he watched his new leading lady. If she were to apply herself, she could be a greater star than Lily Nissen. What other actress could really live forever? Admittedly, she was drawing on deep personal feeling in the role, and the sheer excitement of the event was getting to her, but she was also a fast study. After a few moments of hesitation in the early scenes, she was growing in confidence and now effortlessly dominated her scenes. There were established professional actors out there struggling to keep up with her, and the audience was responding. Perhaps the theatre was ready for a vampire star. And he could feel her inside him, whispering in his head, drawing things out of him. Their love scene was the most incredible thing he had ever played on the stage. Otherwise, the performance was working perfectly, each part falling into place exactly as planned. Detlef keenly missed Varga Bruegel's comments from the wings, but felt by now he could supply them himself.
"Less," he heard his friend say during one speech, "more," in another.
The other players gave him what he needed of them, and more. The trick effects functioned on cue and elicited the proper reactions. Even Kaczynski, drafted in for his bulk in the wordless role of a limping comic ogre, got his laugh and was childishly delighted, begging Detlef to let him come on again whenever a scene could accommodate him.
"Don't you see?" he repeated. "In the mountain inn, I could be a bouncer. In the forest, a wolf trapper."
Detlef had a man stationed near the privies, and after each interval he would report back with what he had heard. The audience, probably the toughest in the Empire as well as the most influential, was in love with the play. Old men were in love with Genevieve, the character and the actress. Reluctantly, his spy repeated Clotilde of Averheim's gushing enthusiasm for Detlef as Oswald, which took in the timbre of his voice, the cut of his moustaches and the curve of his calves. Impulsively, he kissed the man. Detlef sweated through 10 shirts and consumed 3 gallons of lemon water. Ilona Horvathy shone on stage and continued to be a total invalid in the wings, clutching her bucket and occasionally throwing up quietly in it. One of the bandit extras was slashed across the arm by Jessner in the duel, and had to be doctored in the dressing room. Felix Huberman worked like a man possessed, wringing melodies from his musicians that no human ear had ever before apprehended. During the magic scenes, the music became unearthly, almost horrifying. Detlef Sierck knew this was the night for which he would be remembered. 6. Then the last act came. Genevieve and Detlef were alone on stage, supposed to be at the door of the very chamber in which the play was being performed, the great hall of Castle Drachenfels. Giswoldo, as Manesh, joined them, a miner's pick in his fake right arm. His real arm was strapped beside him, but by squeezing a bulb in his hand, he could control the fake to give it the semblance of life. The musicians were silent, save for a lone flute suggesting the unnatural winds flowing through the haunted castle. Genevieve could have sworn that no one in the audience had exhaled for 5 minutes. The actors looked at each other and pushed the door. The scenery descended around them, and the stage seemed to vanish. Genevieve was truly back in a throne room for a king of darkness. The rest of the fortress had been ill-lit and dilapidated, but this was spotless and illumined by jewelled chandeliers. The furniture was ostentatiously luxurious. Gold gleamed from every edge, and silver. Genevieve shuddered to be near so much of the stuff. There were fine paintings on the wall. Rudy would have wept to see so much plunder in one place. A clock chimed, counting unnatural hours, as its single hand circled an unfamiliar dial. In a cage, a harpy preened herself, wiping the remains of her last meal from her feathered breasts. Detlef and Genevieve trod warily on the thick carpets as they circled the stage.
"He's here," said Detlef as Oswald.
"Yes, I feel it too."
Giswaldo, as Manesh, kept to the walls, stabbing at tapestries. One wall was a floor-to-ceiling window set with stained glass. From here, the great enchanter could gaze down from his mountain at the Reichswald. He could see as far as Altdorf and trace the glittering thread of the River Reich through the forests. In the stained glass, there was a giant image of Korn, the blood god, sitting upon his pile of human bones. With a chill, Genevieve realised that Drachenfels didn't so much worship Korn as look down upon him as an amateur in the course of evil. Chaos was so undisciplined. Drachenfels had never been without purpose. There were other gods, other shrines. Cain, Lord of Murder, was honoured in a modest ossuary, and Nurgle, Master of Pestilence and Decay, was celebrated by an odoriferous pile of mangled remains. From this stared the head of Seer Yehan, its eyes pecked out. Detlef as Oswald started to see his tutor so abused, and a laugh resounded through the throne room, a laugh carried and amplified by Huberman's orchestra. 600 years ago, Genevieve had heard that laugh, amid the crowds of Paravon, when the first family's assassin was borne aloft by demons and his insides fell upon the citizenry. In that laughter, Genevieve heard the screams of the damned and the dying, the ripples of rivers of blood, the cracking of a million spines, the fall of a dozen cities, the pleas of murdered infants, the bleating of slaughtered animals. And 25 years ago, Genevieve had heard that laugh, here in this great hall. He loomed up, enormous from his chair. He had been there all the time, but Detlef had cunningly placed him so his appearance would be an unforgettable shock. There were screams from the audience.
"I am Drachenfels," Lowenstein said mildly, the deathly laugh still in his voice. "I bid you welcome to my house. Come in health, go safely, and leave behind some of the happiness you bring."
Giswaldo as Manesh flew at the great enchanter, miner's pick raised. With a terrible languor, moving as might a man of molten bronze, Lowenstein as Drachenfels stretched out and slapped him aside. Giswaldo as Manesh struck a hanging and fell, squealing in a heap. Blood was spurting from him. The harpy was excited and flapped her wings against the bars of her cage, smelling the blood. Drachenfels was holding the dwarf's arm in his hand. It had come off as easily as a cooked chicken's wing. The enchanter inclined his head to look at his souvenir, giggled, and cast it away from him. It writhed across the floor as if alive, trailing blood behind it, and was still. Genevieve looked at Detlef and saw doubt in the actor's face. Giswaldo was screaming far more than he had in rehearsal, and the blood effect was working far better. The dwarf rolled in a carpet, trying to press his stump to the ground. Lowenstein had torn off his left arm. Giswaldo's real right arm erupted from his back, displacing the fake as he tried to stop the flow of blood. Then, with a death rattle, he fell still. Lowenstein. Drachenfels opened a window in the air, and the stink of burning flesh filled the throne room. Genevieve peered through the window and saw a man twisting in eternal torment, demons rending his flesh, lashworms eating through his face, rats gnawing at his limbs. He called out her name and reached for her, reached through the window. Blood fell like rain onto the carpet. It was her father, her 6 centuries dead father.
"I have them all, you know," Drachenfels said. "All my old souls, all kept like that. It prevents me from getting lonely here in my humble palace."
He shut the window on the damned creature Genevieve had loved. She raised her sword against him. He looked from one to the other and laughed again. Spirits were gathering about him, evil spirits, servant spirits. They funneled around him like a tornado.
"So, you have come to kill the monster. A prince of nothing, descendant of a family too cowardly to take an empire for themselves, and a poor dead thing without the sense to lie down in her grave and rot. In whose name do you dare such an endeavour?"
Astonishingly, Detlef got his line out.
"In the name of Sigmar Heldenhammer."
The words sounded weak, echoing slightly, but gave Drachenfels pause. Something was working behind his mask, a rage building up inside him. His spirits swarmed like midges. He threw out his hand in Genevieve's direction, and the tide of demons engulfed her, hurling her back against the wall, smothering her, weighing her down, sweeping over her face. Oswald came forward, and his sword clashed on the enchanter's mailed arm. Drachenfels turned to look down on him. She felt herself dragged down, the insubstantial creatures surging up over her. She couldn't breathe. She could barely move her limbs. She was cold, her teeth chattering, and she was tired. Tired as she shouldn't be until dawn. She felt bathed in stinging sunlight, wrapped in bands of silver, smothered in a sea of garlic. Somewhere, the hawthorn was being sharpened for her heart. Her mind fogged. She tasted dust in her throat. 7. Like the rest of the audience, the Emperor was amazed and appalled. The death of the dwarf had broken the illusion of the play. Something was badly wrong. The actor playing Drachenfels was mad, or worse. His hand went to the hilt of his ceremonial sword. He turned to his friend and felt a knife point at his throat. "Watch the play to its finish, Karl Franz," Oswald said, his tone conversational. "The end is soon." Luitpold jumped from his seat at the Grand Prince. With grace, Oswald stuck out his hand. Karl Franz's heart leaped as the knife flashed, but the Grand Prince simply rapped Luitpold's chin with the hilt. Stunned, the boy fell back onto his chair, his eyes turning up into his head. Karl Franz drew a breath, but the knife was back next to his Adam's apple before he could let it out. Oswald smiled. The audience were torn between the play on the stage and the drama in the Imperial box. Most of them were on their feet. The Countess Emmanuel fell into a dead faint. Huberman, the conductor, had fallen to his knees and was praying fervently. Baron Johann and several others had their swords out, and Matthias levelled a single-shot handgun. "Watch the play to its finish," Oswald said again, prodding his weapon into Karl Franz's flesh. The Emperor felt his own blood soaking into his ruff. No one in the audience made a move.
"Watch the play," said Oswald.
The audience sat down, settling uneasily. They laid down their weapons. The Emperor felt his own sword being unsheathed and heard it clatter against the wall as it was thrown away. Never had the Empire seen such treachery. Oswald turned Karl Franz's head. The Emperor looked at the figure of the great enchanter who was swelling on the stage, becoming the giant the original Constant Drachenfels must have been. The laughter of an evil god filled the great hall. 8. His own laughter echoed off the walls. He could barely remember his life as Laszlo Lohenstein. Since eating the eyes, so many other memories crowded his mind. Thousands of years of experience, of learning, of sensation, throbbed like wounds inside his skull. In the time of the rivers of ice, before the toadmen came from the stars, he was battering a smaller creature with a sharp rock, tearing at the still warm flesh. With each remembered fall of the icy flint, his mind convulsed, drowning in blood. Finally, something small and insignificant was squashed into dirt. His stubby, stiff fingers plucked the eyes from the dead thing, and he ate well through the winter. He felt alive again and filled his lungs with air flavoured gorgeously by the fear that filled the great hall. Laszlo Lohenstein was dead. But Constant Drachenfels lived. Or would live, as soon as his body was warmed by the blood of the vampire slut. Drachenfels looked from Oswald on the stage, quivering with fear, as he had once done, to Oswald in the audience, smiling with resolve as he held his knife to the Emperor's throat. And Drachenfels remembered. The harpy squawked in her cage. The vampire lay in a dead faint. The dwarf bled slowly, fingers clamped over his stump. And the boy with the sword looked up at him, tears coursing down his face, maddened by the dread. Drachenfels raised his hand to strike the prince down, to pulp his head with a single blow and be done with it. The vampire he would amuse himself with later. She might last for as much as a night in his arms before she was broken, used up, and done with. Thus perished all those who defied the dark. The prince fell to his knees, sobbing, his sword thrown away and forgotten, and the great enchanter stayed his hand. An idea formed. He would have to renew himself soon, anyway. This could be used. This boy could be put to good advantage, and an empire could be won.
My prince, I have power over life and death, your life and death, and my life and death.
Oswald wiped his face and tried to bring his sobbing under control. He could have been a 5-year-old bawling for his mother.
You do not have to die here in this fortress, far from your home. If you wish it, you do not have to die at all.
How?
He blubbered, swallowing his sobs.
How can this be?
You can deliver what I want to me.
And what do you want?
The Empire.
Oswald cried out involuntarily, almost a scream, but he fought himself, forced himself to look at the great enchanter. Under his mask, Drachenfels smiled. He had the boy.
I have lived many lifetimes, my prince. I have outworn many bodies. I have long since traded in the flesh I was born with.
Unimaginable years earlier. Drachenfels remembered his first breaths, his first loves, his first kills, his first body. On a vast, empty plain of ice, he had been abandoned by squat, brutish tribesmen who would now seem to have more kinship with the apes of Araby than true men. He had survived. He would live forever.
I am like that girl in many ways. I need to take from others to continue. But she can merely take a little new blood. Her kind are short-lived. 1,000 years, and they grow brittle. I can renew myself eternally, taking the stuff of life from those I conquer. You are privileged, boy. I'm going to let you look at my face.
he took off his mask. Oswald forced himself to look. The prince screamed at the top of his lungs, disturbing the dead and the dying of the fortress, and the great enchanter laughed.
Not so pretty, eh? It's just another lump of rotten meat. It is I, Drachenfels, who am eternal. I, who am constant. Do you recognize your own nose, my prince? The hooked, noble nose of the von Königswalds. I took it from your ancestor, the loathsomely honourable Schlichter. It's worn through. This whole carcass is nearly at its end. You must understand all this, my prince, because you must understand why I intend to let you kill me.
The harpy twittered. Oswald was nearly himself now, the complete young prince. Drachenfels had read him right, seen the self-interest in the adventuring, the desperate need to outdo his forebears, the hollowness in his heart. He would do.
Yes, you shall conquer me, lay me dead in my own dust, and you will be a hero for it. You will grow to great power. Some day, years from now, you will have the empire in your hands, and you will give it to me.
Oswald was smiling now, imagining the glory of it. His never-admitted hatred of Karl Franz, Luitpold's brat of a son, rose to the surface. He would never lick the boots of the house of the second Wilhelm, as his fathers had done.
For I shall return from dust. You will find me a way back. You will find me a man with too small a soul, a man steeped in blood. You will be his patron, and I shall enter him. Then you will deliver me to your friends. I shall take sustenance from them. All who stand with you this day shall die to bring me back.
An objection fluttered on Oswald's lips, but perished there, unsaid. He looked at Genevieve, prone on the floor, and there was no regret in his heart.
Then we shall bend the electors to our purpose. Most will be led by their own interests, the others we shall kill. The emperor will die, and his heirs will die. And you will make me emperor in his stead. We shall rule the empire for an age. Nothing will stand before us. Bretonnia, Istalia, Tylia, Kislev. The new territories, the whole world. All shall bow or be devastated as no land has ever been devastated since the time of Sigmar. Humanity will be our slaves, and all the other races will be slaughtered like cattle. We shall make whorehouses of temples, mausoleums of cities, boneyards of continents, deserts of forests.
The light was burning inside Oswald now, the light of ambition, of bloodlust, of greed. He would have been this without enchantment, Drachenfels knew. This was Oswald von Königswald, as he was always intended to be.
Kneel to me, Oswald. Swear loyalty to our plan. Loyalty in blood.
Oswald knelt and drew his dagger. He hesitated.
You could not kill the great enchanter without earning a scar or two, could you?
Oswald nodded his head and slashed at the palm of his left hand, at his cheek and at his chest. His shirt tore, and a line of red ran across his skin. Drachenfels touched his gloved fingers to Oswald's wounds and raised the blood to his ragged lips. He tasted, and Oswald was his forever. He roared his triumph and whirled about the room, smashing articles he had treasured for millennia. He took the harpy's cage and crushed it between his great hands, squashing the poor thing inside until it was silent, The bent bars of her prison twisted deep in her flesh. He hurled an oak table through his stained glass window and heard it shatter on the rocks 1,000 feet below, a tinkling patter of multicoloured shards raining around it. His enchantment reached throughout his fortress, and his servitors were struck down. Flesh turned to stone, and stone turned to ashes. Demons were freed or hurled back to their hells. An entire wing crumbled and fell, and throughout the world his expiry was felt by the lesser enchanters. Finally, when enough had been done, Drachenfels turned again to the trembling Oswald. He snapped the lad's sword between his fingers and hauled a heavy, two-handed blade down from the wall. It had been dipped in the sacred blood of Sigmar and plated all over with silver, now worn through in patches.
"This is a weapon fit to kill Constant Drachenfels."
Oswald could barely lift it. Drachenfels fixed him with his stare and willed strength into the prince's limbs. The sword came up, and every muscle in Oswald's body trembled with the effort, with the fear, and with the excitement. Drachenfels tore open his armour. The stench of his rotting flesh filled the room. The great enchanter laughed again.
"Do it, boy! Do it now!"
9. This wasn't the finale Detlef had written. Something was badly wrong with Lohenstein, not to mention Genevieve and Oswald and the Emperor, and in all probability, the world. Lohenstein, as Drachenfels, who was acting more like Drachenfels as Lohenstein, had departed from the script. Half the house lights had come on now, and the company were spilling from the wings towards the auditorium. They kept away from Lohenstein, but their eyes were fixed on him. The audience were in their seats, looking between the monster on the stage and their imperiled emperor. Grand Prince Oswald, the mask off at last, dared them to try for him. And the actor, whose mask was the reality, surveyed the chaos he had wrought. Detlef's prop sword felt very puny indeed in his grip. Lohenstein stood over Genevieve, who was in her stage swoon. Her eyes opened and she screamed. He bent down to her, hands like claws. She rolled away from his grasp and scrambled to her feet. She stood beside Detlef. They faced the monster together. He felt her in his mind again, felt her fear and her uncertainty, but also her resilience and her courage.
"It's Drachenfels," she hissed in his ear. "We've brought him back."
Lohenstein, Drachenfels, laughed again. Someone in the audience discharged a gun, and a wound opened in the monster's chest. He wiped it shut, still laughing, and threw something small. There was a scream as the gunman went down, writhing in torment. It had been Matthias, the Grand Theogonist's advisor. Now, he didn't much resemble anything naturally human.
"Does anyone dare defy me?" the great voice said. "Does anyone dare stand between me and the vampire?"
Detlef was standing between Drachenfels and Genevieve. His immediate impulse was to get out of the way, but the wounds in his neck ached. The wound in his heart kept him where he was. She willed him to go, to leave her to this monster's mercies, but he couldn't.
"Back,"
he said, summoning all his acting skills to put the heroic ring into his voice.
"In the name of Sigmar, back."
"Sigmar?"
Spittle flew from the mouth slit of the mask.
"He's dead and gone, little man. But I'm here." "Then, in my name, back."
"Your name?"
"Who are you to defy Constant Drachenfels, the great enchanter, the eternal champion of evil, the darkness who would not be defied?"
"Detlef Sirk,"
he snapped.
"Genius!"
Drachenfels was still amused.
"A genius, is it? I've eaten of many geniuses. One more will be most
Refreshing.
Detlef realized he was going to die before the curtain came down on his play. He would die before his best work was done. To future generations, he would be a footnote, a minor imitator of Taradash who showed promise he never lived to fulfill. A nothing. The great enchanter was not just going to take away his life, but was going to make it seem as if he had never been, never walked on a stage, never lifted a quill from its pot. Nobody had ever died as thoroughly as he would die now. Drachenfels's hand fell on Detlef's left shoulder. The fire of agony coursed through his arm as it popped out of joint. The great enchanter was exerting enough pressure to crush his bones to fragments. Detlef twisted in agony, unable to break the hold, unable to fall away in ruins. By degrees, Drachenfels supplied more force to his grip. His putrid grave breath was in Detlef's face. The actor's entire left side tried to curl up to escape the merciless pain. Drachenfels's fingers burrowed into his flesh like lash worms. A few more moments of this, and Detlef would be glad of the release of death. Behind the monster's mask, evil eyes glowed. Then Genevieve jumped. 10. 3 times before had the killing frenzy fallen upon her. She always regretted it, feeling herself no better than Vitsak or Katerin or all those other truly dead tyrants as she wiped the innocent blood from her face. The faces of her dead sometimes bothered her, as the face of Drachenfels had been tormenting her dreams these last few years. This time, however, there would be no regrets. This was the righteous killing for which she had been made, the killing that would pay back all those whose lives she had sapped. Her muscles corded, her blood took fire, and the red haze came over her vision. She saw through blood-filled eyes. Detlef hung from Drachenfels's fist, screaming like a man on the rack. Oswald, smiling, treacherous, thrice-damned Oswald, had his knife in Carl Franz's throat. These things she would not tolerate. Her teeth pained her as they grew, and her fingers bled as the nails sprouted like talons. Her mouth gaped as the sharp ivory spears split her gums. Her face became a flesh mask, the thick skin pulled tight, a mirthless grin exposing her knife-like fangs. The primitive part of her brain, the vampire part of her, the legacy of Chandaniac, took over, and she leaped at her enemy, the killing fury building in her like a passion. There was love in it, and hate, and despair, and joy, and there would be death at the end. Drachenfels was knocked off balance, but stayed upright. Detlef was thrown away, landing in a heap. Genevieve fastened her legs about the monster's midriff and sank her claws into his padded shoulders. Strips of Lowenstein's stage costume fell away, disclosing the festering meat beneath. Worms crawled through his body, twining around her fingers as she dug through his flesh to get a snapping grip on his bones. She had no distaste for this thing now, just a need to kill. There was pandemonium in the audience. Oswald was shouting. So was everyone else. People were trying to escape, fighting each other. Others stood calm, waiting for their chance. Several elderly dignitaries were in the throes of heart seizures. Genevieve pulled a hand from the monster's open shoulder and tore at Drachenfels's mask. The leather straps parted under her knife-sharp nails and the iron plates buckled. It came free, and she hurled it away. There were screams from the audience. She avoided looking him in the face. She retained that much rationality. She wasn't interested in exposing his face anyway. She just needed to get the iron guard away from his neck. Her mouth opened wide, her jawbone dislocating itself as new rows of teeth slid out of their sheaths, then snapped shut. She bit deep into the monster's neck. She sucked, but there was no blood. Dirt choked her throat, but she still sucked. The foulest, most rancid, most rotten taste she had ever known filled her mouth, and soaked through to her stomach. The taste burned like acid, and her body tried in vain to reject it. She felt herself withering as the bane spread. Still, she sucked. The scream began as Lowenstein's last gasp, then grew in sound and fury. Her eardrums coursed with pain. Her skeleton shook inside her body. She felt mighty blows on her ribs. The scream was like a hurricane, blasting all in its path. A stale trickle flowed into her mouth. It was more disgusting than the dry flesh. She bit away the mouthful she had been working on and spat it out, then sunk her teeth in again, higher this time. The great enchanter's ear came away, and she swallowed it. She scraped a patch of grey meat away from the side of his skull, exposing the cranial seams. Clear yellow fluid seeped through between the bony plates. She extended her tongue to lick it up. A hand covered her face and pushed her back. Her neck strained, near to snapping point. She bit through the thick glove, but couldn't lodge her teeth in his palm. Another hand gripped her waist, her legs unwound from Drachenfels. The killing frenzy ebbed, and she felt her vampire teeth receding. Convulsing, she vomited the ear she had eaten, and it stuck to the hand over her mouth. She felt death touching her again. Chandaniac was waiting for her, and all the others she had outlived in her time. Drachenfels tore her clothes, baring her veins. Her blood, the blood she had renewed so many times, would make him whole again. By her death, she would resurrect him. 11. Detlef was still alive. Half of his body was numb with shock, and the other half crawling with pain. But he was still alive. Drachenfels's scream filled the hall, pounding like nails into everyone's heads. Stones were shaken loose from the walls by the noise and fell on members of the audience. Every pane of glass in every window shattered at once. Old people died, and young people were driven mad. Detlef got to his knees and crawled away. Genevieve had sacrificed herself for him. He would live, at least for the moment, and she would die in his stead. He could not allow that. On his feet, stumbling, he knocked over a section of scenery. The person who had been hiding behind it, Kaczynski, fled. Ropes fell around Detlef and weights from above. Flats collapsed, buckling upon each other. A lantern fell, and a ring of burning oil spread from it. He had lost his sword. He needed a weapon. Leaning against the wall was a sledgehammer. Kaczynski had hefted it when the scenery was being put together. It should have been packed away. It was dangerous where it was. Someone could easily trip over it on their way backstage. Detlef had fired people for less. This time, if he lived, he would treble Kaczynski's salary and cast the brute in romantic leads if he wanted it. Detlef picked up the hammer, his wrists hurt with the weight of it, and his wounded shoulder flared with pain. It was just an ordinary hammer. But it was no ordinary strength which flooded from it into Detlef's body. As he raised the hammer to strike, Detlef imagined a slight glow about it, as if gold were mixed with the lead. "In the name of Sigmar," he swore. His pains vanished, and his blow connected. 12. Drachenfels took the full force of the swing in the small of his back. He held Genevieve to him, unwilling to give up the blood that would revivify him. Detlef Sierck swung round with his blow and faced the great enchanter. Drachenfels saw the shining hammer in his hands and knew a moment of fear. He didn't dare say the name that came to him. Long ago, he had stood at the head of his defeated goblin horde, humbled by the wild-eyed, blonde-bearded giant who held his hammer high in victory. His magics deserted him, and his body rotted as the hammer blows connected. It had taken 1,000 years to claw his way back to full life. The light that shone in Detlef's eyes was not the light of genius. It was the light of Sigmar. The human tribes of the northeast and all the hordes of the dwarves had rallied to that hammer. For the first time, Drachenfels had been bested in battle. Sigmar Heldenhammer had stood over him, his boot on the great enchanter's face, and ground him into the mud. Genevieve struggled free of him and darted away. Another blow fell on the exposed plates of his skull. Deep inside Constant Drachenfels, Laszlo Lowenstein floundered in death, and Erzbet, Rudy, Manesh and Anton Veit, and the others, the many thousand others. Detlef jabbed with the hammer, using it like a staff, and Drachenfels felt his nose cave inwards. Erzbet's heart burst, flooding bile into his chest. Rudy's fat turned liquid and gushed down into the cavity of his stomach. Manesh's skin split and sloughed off him in swathes. Veit's bones cracked. Drachenfels was betrayed by his kills. Waiting in the wings, Drachenfels saw the monk-robed figures. That semi-human ape tribesman would be there, and the thousands upon thousands who had followed him into death. Detlef, paint streaming from his face, berserker foam in his mouth, swung his hammer. Lowenstein's thin body stood alone in the ruin that would have been the great enchanter. Drachenfels cried out again, feebly this time.
Sigmar, he bleated. Have mercy.
The hammer blows landed. The skull cracked open like an egg. Drachenfels collapsed, and the blows continued to come. It had been cold on the plains, and he had been left behind to die, too sickly to be supported by the tribe. The other man, the first kill, had chanced by, and he had fought to take the life from him. He had won. But now, 15,000 years later, he knew he had lost after all. He had only held off death for a few moments in the span of eternity. For the last time, the life went out of him. 13. Karl Franz was bleeding badly now. Oswald's hand wasn't steady, and the blade was biting deep. It was only luck that had kept him from severing the artery or poking through to the windpipe. The spectacle on the stage was not what anyone had expected. The Emperor felt Oswald's body shake as Detlef Sierk demolished the actor playing Drachenfels. The traitor's plans had gone awry.
Oswald von Königswald!
Shouted Detlef, bloody hammer held aloft. The auditorium grew quiet. There was the crackle of flames, but all the crying and shouting stopped.
Oswald, come here!
Karl Franz could hear the Elector whimpering. The knife shook in the groove it had carved in his neck.
Stay where you are, or the Emperor dies!
Oswald's voice was weak now, too high, too slurred. Detlef seemed to shrink a little, as if coming to his senses. He looked at the hammer and at the dead thing on the stage. He laid the weapon down. Genevieve Dudonnet stood beside him, her arm about him, when he was ready to sag and drop.
Kill Karl Franz and you'll be dead before he hits the floor, von Königswald, said Baron Johann von Mecklenburg, his sword raised.
The Elector of Sudenland was not alone. A forest of sword points glittered. Oswald was looking around desperately for a way out, for an escape route. The back of the box was guarded. The sweetmeat man stood there in a wrestler's stance. He was one of the Imperial bodyguards.
Know this, Karl Franz, Oswald whispered to him. I hate you and all your works. For years I've had to swallow my disgust in your presence. If nothing else, I shall end the House of the Second Wilhelm tonight. Snick!
Oswald pushed Karl Franz away, waving his bloodied knife in the air, and vaulted over the side of the box. 14. Grand Prince Oswald hit the floor in a crouch, and ran down the side of the great hall. A high priest of Ulric stood in his way, but the man was old and was knocked down easily. As he fled, Oswald upturned the chairs the audience had been sitting in, hindering his would-be pursuers. Baron Johann and his confederates stood before the main entrance, waiting for their quarry. Oswald backed away from them and made a dash for the stage. Genevieve saw him coming and staggered into his way. She was weakened from her attack on Drachenfels and nauseous from the after effects of his poisoned flesh, but she was still stronger than an ordinary man. She made a fist and struck Oswald in the face, mashing his aristocratic nose. She licked the blood off her knuckles. It was just blood, nothing special. Detlef stood by and watched, an audience for once. Whatever had possessed him, and Genevieve had a fairly good idea about that, during his fight with the great enchanter, had gone now, leaving him puzzled, drained, and vulnerable. Enraged, Oswald hurled himself at her. She sidestepped, and he fell. He stood up, his boot slipping in the pool Drachenfels had left of himself. He swore, the knife darted out, and Genevieve's arm stung. More silver. He stabbed at her and missed. He flung the knife and missed. Fangs exposed, she lunged for him. He dodged away. With a clean motion, he drew his sword and brought the point to rest against her breast. It was silvered too. A simple thrust, and her heart would be pierced. Oswald smiled sweetly at her.
We must all die, my pretty Genevieve, must we not?
15. A sword arced from the auditorium, spinning end over end. Detlef stuck out his hand and snatched the hilt from the air, getting a good grip.
Use it well, play actor, shouted Baron Johann.
Detlef lashed out and struck Oswald's blade away from Genevieve's heart. Genevieve stepped away. The Grand Prince turned, spat a tooth at him, and assumed the duelling stance.
Ha!
His sword swiped, slashed Detlef across the chest, and returned to its place. Oswald smiled nastily through the blood. Having demonstrated his skill, he would now take Detlef apart piece by piece for his own amusement. He had lost an empire, but he could still kill the fool dressed as his younger self. Detlef hacked, but Oswald parried. Oswald struck out, but Detlef backed away. Then they fell at each other with deadly seriousness. Detlef fought the weariness in his bones and summoned extra reserves of strength. Oswald wielded his sword with desperation, knowing his life depended upon this victory. But also, he had had a courtly education, the private tuition of Valancourt of Nuln, the best blades. All Detlef knew was how to make a mock battle look good for an audience. Oswald danced around him, slicing his clothes, scratching his face. Tiring of the game, the Grand Prince came to kill him and found Detlef's sword point lodged between his ribs. Detlef thrust forward, and Oswald lurched off his feet, sliding the full length of the sword until the hilt rested against his chest. The Grand Prince spat blood and died. Envoy. After the premiere of Drachenfels, everyone needed lots of bed rest. They all had scars. The Emperor survived, but spoke in a whisper for a few months. Luitpold suffered nothing worse than a swollen jaw and a severe headache, and complained of missing the end of the play. Genevieve fed herself from volunteers and recovered within a day or two. Detlef collapsed moments after the Grand Prince's death and had to be nursed back to health with hot broth and herbal infusions. His shoulder was always stiff after that, but he never let it be a handicap. Baron Johann von Mecklenburg, Elector of Sudenland, took over and saw to the burial of Oswald von Königswald in an unmarked grave in the mountains. Before leaving it, he spat onto the earth and cursed the Grand Prince's memory. The remains of the Drachenfels thing he cut apart and threw into the valley for the wolves. What there was wasn't much like anything that had ever lived. He imagined he saw a group of cowled figures watching him as he disposed of the monster, but when the business was done with, they were gone. The wolves died, but few were sorry of that. The Grand Theogonist of Sigmar, in mourning for his Matthias, and the High Priest of Ulric, forgot their differences for an afternoon, and jointly held a ceremony of thanks for the deliverance of the Empire. It was not well attended, but everyone considered their duty to the gods done. Detlef's company milled around, loading up their equipment on their wagons. Felix Huberman and Guglielmo Pentangeli took over the running of the troop while Detlef was indisposed and was collecting a pile of invitations to stage Drachenfels in Altdorf with its original ending intact. The conductor held off the many managements, knowing that Detlef would have to rewrite the story in accordance with the known facts. The nature of the conspiracy between the Great Enchanter and the Grand Prince of Ostland would never be known, but whatever Detlef chose to write would be the accepted version. The Elector of Middenland sent a note of apology to Detlef's bedside and promised to settle any outstanding debts accrued during the production of Drachenfels, providing he were given a token percentage of the profits of any eventual staging of the work. Huberman translated Detlef's reply into a polite no and refinanced the company by asking the actors and musicians to invest their own money. Somehow, he found some old gold and silver artefacts of elven manufacture in a trunk and used them for capital. Guglielmo drafted the business agreements that founded the Altdorf Joint Stock Theatre and cheerfully signed the running of the company over to Detlef Seac. The electorals conferred briefly, one seat around the table conspicuously unfilled, and requested that the emperor nominate a new elector of Ostland. The princedom was due to pass to a cousin of Oswald's, but the electoral vote, it was decided, should be disposed of elsewhere. The emperor's first suggestion, that the imperial family be granted a vote in the college, was turned down. And in the end, the vote went with the kingdom, after all. Maximilian von Königswald had been a good man, and all the others of his line before him. But the whole family were stripped of power thanks to the treachery of a single son of the house. The emperor's choice of successor was approved. The new electors of Ostland would in future be the von Tassenincks. Finally, it was decided that the fortress of Drachenfels should be destroyed, and alchemists were brought in to place explosive charges throughout the structure. Baron Johann watched from the opposite mountain, conscious again of the hooded phantoms in the periphery of his vision, and the whole place exploded most satisfactorily, raining down enough stone into a nearby valley to keep the villagers of three communities supplied with blocks for household repair for generations to come. Henrik Crayley was arrested and charged with murder. Despite Detlef's deposition, he was acquitted on the grounds that Varga Bruegel had more or less killed himself and was probably a dangerous mutant anyway. However, without a salary from the House of von Königswald, the former steward ran up a huge legal bill he was unable to settle and spent the rest of his life as an inmate in Munzen Keep. His dearest ambition, to become a trustee, was never fulfilled. Lily Nissen was briefly married to a successful pit fighter until an accident in the ring cut short his career. Her much-vaunted Marienburg production of The Romance of Fair Matilda was a costly failure, and she retired from the stage soon after being offered her first mother role. After several more marriages and a well-publicised affair with a cousin of Tsar Radi Boker, she retired completely from public life and drove to despair a succession of collaborators engaged to help her with her never-to-be-completed memoirs. Peter Kaczynski became a popular jester in a double act with Justus the Trickster. Kerith the Cobbler became official dress designer to the Countess Emanuel von Liebowitz and was a great favourite with the ladies of Nuln. Sharadat became a grave robber and was torn apart by demons while looting a tomb that happened to be under a particularly severe curse. Innkeeper Bauman was persuaded by Corin, the halfling, to re-enter the Black Bat in the Street of 100 Taverns dicing tourney, and the inn's team swept the event 3 years in succession. Reinhardt Jessner and Ilona Horvathi were married. They named their twins Rudy and Erzbert. Clotilde of Averheim discovered a herbalist who successfully treated her skin condition, and she became the most celebrated beauty in this corner of the empire. Clementine Clausewitz left the sisterhood of Shalia and married an apothecary. Witzak the vampire returned to Carrack Vaan and was destroyed by a secret society dedicated to the memory of the Tsarevich Pavel. Lady Melissa Daquez grew bored with the Convent of Eternal Night and Solace and travelled widely, it was rumoured, in Lustria and the New World in the company of a series of foster parents. Sergei Bukharin lost an eye in a bawdy house brawl on the Altdorf waterfront and later succumbed to untreated syphilis. Elder Honorio continued to offer refuge to world-weary vampires and opened a sister refuge for werewolves and other shapeshifters. Governor Gerd van Sant was indicted on charges of corruption and sent to command a penal colony in the wasteland. Seymour Nebenzahl converted to the worship of a new discovered demigod of frosts and ice and became the most influential soothsayer in Norska. No one ever asked what happened to Laszlo Lowenstein. Detlef Seok recovered and rewrote Drachenfels as the tragedy of Oswald. He took the title role in the first run at the Temple of Drama in Altdorf, but Genevieve Dieudonné could not be persuaded to repeat her one and only venture as an actress. The play ran for some years, and Detlef followed it up with The Treachery of Oswald, which told the end of the story, and in which he surprised everyone by casting Reinhardt Jessner as Detlef Seok, and himself taking the twin roles of Laszlo Lowenstein and Drachenfels. Then he produced a succession of mature masterpieces. With the profits of the Oswald plays, he bought a theatre, which, by common consent of the company, he renamed the Varga Bruegel Memorial Playhouse. The history of Sigmar was rewritten and staged to some critical acclaim, although it never equaled the popularity of Detlef's later works. Even the critics who hated him personally came to acknowledge him as at least the equal of Jacopo Taradas. Although no one ever called him devout, he made substantial donations to the cult of Sigmar and built a shrine to the hammer in his townhouse. He spent some years with Genevieve and discovered many new sensations with her. His sonnet cycle to My Unchanging Lady is widely held by scholars to be his best work. They were finally parted by the years, when Detlef was in his 50s and Genevieve still seemed 16, but she remained the love of his life. Genevieve lived forever. Detlef did not, but his plays did. That was Drachenfels by Kim Newman, read by Antonia Beamish. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.